I'd like to talk about your transition from being a player to being a manager.
Yeah.
Into coaching. You captained all the clubs you played for, clearly a leader in that sense. Was management the obvious step? What was your mindset like at the end of your career in that last season, perhaps at Middlesbrough?
Because of the type of player I was, I think there would be an expectation that I probably would go into management. And if I'm absolutely honest, I think that weighed quite heavily. So that was a pressure that weighed quite heavily on me. And I think if you ask a lot of players whether they're ready to retire, I mean, physically I was, because I'd had a number of, I'd had an operation every year on my knee for about 6 or 7 years. So I'd come to a point where physically I think I was ready, I know I was ready to retire. Mentally, I hoped I was, but I wasn't. And Sheffield Wednesday, I was supposed to be joining Ron Atkinson to be his assistant, and then Ron got sacked, and so I didn't go to Sheffield Wednesday in the end. Was actually interviewed for the Sheffield United job, didn't get that. Steve Bruce took that. And yeah, my first job became, I took around Christmas time, to go to Carlisle. Whether I was ready for management or not is a totally different question. I'd started to do my coaching badges, so I'd another of my experiences with Howard Wilkinson. I was one of a number of people who were fast tracked into the UEFA B license, which is level 3, as it's probably better known. And so there were a number of us who were fast tracked onto that. It was a good experience. I was working. I did some sort of itinerant work, some part time work with some of the youth teams as well. But I don't think, with hindsight, looking at the job I took at Carlisle, I got enough experience or enough technical knowledge in terms of being able to deal with the day-to-day scenarios of managing, you know, for want of a... what I took into it with my, you know, my character traits, I think... certainly helped me in dealing with the situation, and so, you know, the sort of leadership qualities, but whether I had the technical abilities is a totally different question. So
was it a bit of a baptism of fire at Carlisle? Well, everyone knows what happens, yeah, at the end of the season, but heading into it, I mean, the owner Michael Knighton was an eccentric man.
Yeah.
You know, the whole reason Jimmy Glass had to come to the club was because your goalkeeper got sold in the middle of a relegation fight. So
yeah, I mean,
it's thrown in at the deep end.
Absolutely, but I also know what I am. I know what my learning style is. I'm somebody who learns through doing. I am somebody who can cope with those sorts of experiences, even though sometimes it can be a bit of a lonely place and you can feel a bit isolated. But for sure, you know, I mean, I dealt with it. I actually spoke with Michael just after Christmas, I think it was. He got in contact with me via email. I rang him up. I thought, you know, so look, I always tell people, it was a testing experience for me, and yeah, we had our differences from time to time, but I've never disliked him as a guy, and it was he gave me my first opportunity, albeit a very difficult one, and I didn't last after the season. I got sacked straight after the season finished.
What was the reasoning or circumstances behind that? It's unusual after such a miraculous survival for the manager to leave immediately afterwards.
Yeah, I didn't really ask, to be honest with you. It was a board decision that they, and you know, when people make those sorts of decisions, I don't really see a great deal of mileage in trying to talk any more about it, really. It happened. You know, our form had not been great, so you could argue that it's understandable in many ways. But look, the whole scenario surrounding the Jimmy Glass situation, and you'll probably be aware of the documentary that's been done recently. Yep. that I contributed to, and it was, yeah, it brought it all back to me. It's an incredible story in terms of the circumstances surrounding it. And you've already mentioned the fact that, you know, we were given special dispensation to get a goalkeeper in because we actually didn't have one that was fit. And Jimmy agreed to come along, and, you know, going into the final game of the season, we were reliant on results elsewhere, even if we won our own game. So, you know, it's not an easy situation for the players to deal with, for sure, and they dealt with it exceptionally well. But, I mean, the outcome, wow. More or less the last kick of the game for a goalkeeper on loan to score is quite ridiculous, really, but it happened. And you know, I often reflect on what the outcome on my career would be had that not have happened. Mm. You know, I mean, you don't know, but I mean, after that dip into the waters of management, I didn't manage again then until 2008.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you look at my coaching and managerial career, which spans now 21 years, I've managed for 11 of those. Mm. And been an assistant or a coach in some form for the other. So I've got a bit of a different pathway to a lot of people who just manage, because, you know, I've assisted some, you know, some very capable managers, and have learnt and have needed different skill sets to support those managers. And, you know, I think sometimes you can choose your pathway, but if you've got an open mind and sort of just run with it as well, as I have done, with just really going with the flow and seeing what opportunities come, because you can be specific if you want and say this is what I want to do, but that doesn't happen for everybody. You know, if you want to work and be and experience different things, I think you've got to have a bit of an open mind on where the next opportunity might take you. So, you know, after leaving Carlisle, my next job was working with one of my old teammates at Stoke. Gary Megson rang me and asked me if I'd be interested in going in there as his assistant. And I did go in there, and Gary got sacked. I mean, we had some fun, to be fair. And I like him a lot, and he's very... It's a shame he's not working still. You know, for me, he was he is a good manager, but he didn't survive when there was an Icelandic takeover and Gudjon Thordarson came into to Stoke, and he actually gave me an awful lot of responsibility. I mean, to start with, I was undecided whether I should stay, but he gave me a lot of responsibility in terms of exposure to coaching. And yeah, so it was probably a really good experience for me. Mm.
And you're back in first team management with Southampton in 2008, yeah. just for 3 months, achieving survival on the final day of the season, just like with Carlisle.
Yeah.
What was that final day of the season like? What was the the context surrounding that. I note that Stern John was hero with two goals and also almost villain with a red card as well.
Yeah, and going into that game, of course, Sheffield United still had an outside chance of promotion. And, you know, I'd signed Chris Lucchetti on loan from Sheffield United, and he'd been, along with Chris Perry, very, very important in terms of our some of our more recent positive results in trying to avoid relegation. And of course he couldn't play in that game, so there was a lot of added pressure going into that. And really we were in a situation that we didn't feel that we we shouldn't really have been there,
to go down.
Well,
you're flirting with it.
No. It was more. We missed some opportunities to win games that really we should have done better in. And I wouldn't say that. You know, if teams that go down because over the duration of the season, simple as that. You can't really argue too often about that. You can't argue about luck over the course of the season necessarily. It doesn't work like that. But going into that last game, yeah, we're under a lot of pressure. I remember we've been at the training ground, and as a family, we got Nicky, my wife's family, down to come to the game, and well, there's a lot of people come down to go to the game, and we actually went to Lymington for a walk in the afternoon before the day before the game, and parked the car, and I was walking through a car park, some Southampton supporters were coming the other way, and we walked past the job centre, and I said, well, I might be needing that on Monday if things don't go right tomorrow. You know, it was one of those bizarre situations that we were, I'm back in a management situation for the first time for a long time, and lo and behold, it's a stay up on the final day of the season, and it was a tough game because we went behind in that game as well, and but to win it 3-2 was very, very emotional for everybody involved, and but again, I didn't last long after that one either.
It's another final day survival, and again, you moved on. Was it always meant to be the case?
No. Let me tell you, what a fantastic football club! I absolutely loved it there. When I went in there, Lee Hughes was the chief exec. Laurie McMenemy was really an advisor to the board. Leon Crouch, who I still keep in contact with now, had gone in there as the chairman. Mary Corbett was on the board. She was there were people in there who had been around the club for a long time. Very, very supportive. It got a great feel to it. Good facilities. I would have love to have stayed there because it had got so many things that I was a lot of the staff at the stadium, it was just a great feel to it. And then of course there was a board takeover, there was a shift in power there, and so I became another casualty of war, so to speak. It was circumstantial. I didn't really want to apply for the job that I'd already got. I ended up being sacked when I was on holiday. And the kids came down to the pool and said, "Dad, you've been sacked." I went, well, there we are. Such is life. It's Rupert Lowe had been finding a way back in there, and it was a not a very tasteful end to what had been an enjoyable experience in many ways, but it's football. And I think one thing that you have to be quite clear on if you decide to go into the management game is that, and I say this to many people, it's not if you're going to get sacked, it's when. Yep. It's when you're going to leave, it's not if you're going to leave. And there seldom happens where managers get a chance to build a dynasty over a period of time. You know, when you look at in the top flight, there have been a couple. I mean, even in the Football League, Paul Tisdale at Exeter over a long, long period of time. Dario Gredi at Crewe over a long period of time. Those things don't happen very often. Yeah. And I was talking about my days at Shrewsbury earlier, you know, in those days, or my time there, it was very much a case of there would be a manager and an assistant manager, and the manager would move on, the assistant to take over. And it happened, you know, with Alan Durbin, Richie Barker, then with Graham Turner, then with Chick Bates, and they'd all been assisting each other and taken over from each other. So, you know, sometimes there is a there's an order and there's a way of doing things which is quite unusual, and it doesn't happen these days for sure.
The quirk of leaving Southampton is that you then take over Leicester,
yeah,
the team relegated to League One because of your survival.
Not entirely true. No, not entirely true. They were unable to win themselves, and Coventry got a ridiculous result away at, I can't remember, but it was, but Lee Hughes had left Southampton and gone to Leicester, and I think that was a very big influence on me getting an interview to go there. Mm-hmm. So I was able to get back into work relatively quickly. And
what sort of state was the club in? A big club relegated to League One. We've seen it a few times, but I can imagine it as a situation for a club that size is fairly traumatic in that sense. And yet, straight back up to the second tier. So how did you need to act quickly to turn things around after that relegation?
Well, what I did do, I had a very clear idea of who I wanted with me. So I'd worked with Steve Walsh at Newcastle. Sam Allardyce had taken him in. Craig Shakespeare I'd worked with at West Brom. I'd play with him at Sheffield Wednesday. And I'd been speaking to them when I was at Southampton about, you know, the possibility of working together. Steve had actually, after he left Newcastle, had actually been down to Southampton to give a presentation to the board, which had gone down very, very well. So really, it was just a case of transferring the plan that we possibly got for Southampton and moving it to Leicester. Mm-hmm. And I got the go-ahead to be able to do that. Paul Balsam, who I met when I was at Southampton, who still works at Southampton now, at Leicester now, and still at OHL, works full-time with the Swedish national side and works as a consultant with those clubs, again came to Leicester. So I got people around me who are new, with skill sets that I thought were important to us, and I also inherited some incredibly loyal and capable members of staff with strong opinions who stretch me. So although on the face of it, it wasn't a particularly positive situation to go into, you know, we had a very successful season and
what,
got back
what was
up.
So good about that team in the end, once you got going, what were the sort of key strengths of the squad of players that you had? How did you?
We got a good blend of youth experience, we got a very, yeah, I mean, it was, we got goals, we got defenders who were good at defending. I mean, for us to get promotion, 96 points, and use 5 goalkeepers, I think we used in that year, is pretty unique, I would think. You know, because when you want a consistently settled side, when you're changing your goalkeeper as often as we did, we did it pretty successfully. But you know, in that year we only lost 4 games. We got a front partnership of Matty Fryett and Steve Howard, who got plenty of goals, and we got plenty of goals within the side as well. So we had a good team, we had some good young players, and we had a extraordinary blend of very capable staff, but as importantly, we were as strong a group of people as the players were. So my most enjoyable season as a manager, if I'm honest.
Yeah. The next season, you got pretty close to the old double promotion.
Yeah, we did.
Losing on penalties to Cardiff.
Yeah.
And that summer, you actually moved to Hull, away from Leicester, just for a short period. Then a season with Hull after they had just been relegated from the Premier League. So. Yeah. Was it quite helpful to have had that experience of taking over Leicester after a relegation? I mean, Hull, any similarities there with what they'd gone through? I noticed it was a very swollen squad that you inherited.
And we had a transfer embargo to deal with. We had a lot of the difference there. Okay, the difference with taking over Hull was. And contrary to what some people may tell you, I really enjoyed my time there as well. Working with Adam Pearson, Adam was my introduction, I suppose, in many ways, to working with what would be called a director of football in many guises. Adam was a good problem solver, very supportive. We had to be creative in terms of being able to get players in and out. We got some problem players to get out, for sure, in the sense that, and it's not the players' fault that they're on such good contracts, but we had a large squad of players who had run their course at the club and needed to make the squad more competitive in terms of numbers wise, also clearly to cut the wage bill. So it was a different experience and a different challenge for us as a management team to go in there and try and have a positive effect, and certainly It was tough. We had a very difficult start. We started the season fine, and then we had a period where we found it very, very difficult. But then we went on a run of, I think we I don't think it's been beaten either. We went on the club's best run of away results, and I think we were only beaten, and I was furious the last game of the season. We'd been away at Bristol City 3-0, and we'd been unbeaten since winning away, I think, at Norwich in maybe October. So we'd sort of we did as a management team a very good job of stabilising a club which had got a number of problems which people outside of the club wouldn't necessarily recognise. And so it was we sort of clawed back a very difficult situation, and then the following year got the opportunity to go back to Leicester.
Yeah, and what sort of shape was Leicester in upon your return? It was only a year, but new ownership. Vichai, of course, the King Power ownership. Spoken to Chris Powell previously, and he painted a picture of a set of owners who wanted to improve the club with patience and with planning.
I think what you have to first recognise when you want to talk about Leicester City and the strategy of the ownership, and that would be, it would be very easy for Kunvichai to have bought a Premier League side if he wanted to. You know, clearly the financial strength of King Power was their ability, could have been very easily to go in and buy a club which had got already a status which would allow them to, you could argue, get quicker results. But what they decided to do was to invest in a club which had got the scope to develop and to achieve success over a period of time, where actually the success, if it was achieved, would have meaning and would have a great deal more satisfaction for them on a personal level, just for them. So, you know, we can't underplay that as a set of circumstances, I don't think, anyway. And yeah, they were, you asked me what was the state of the club when I went back in. The playing squad was, in my opinion, too big, too. I inherited some really good players. I inherited some players that I didn't fancy and didn't really suit the identity that we wanted to have. And I can very honestly admit to you at times it nearly broke me and it nearly broke the staff that we had a squad of players which we had not got a clue what we were going to get out of them every time we took the field. So you pick what you think is your best side and you win, and then you pick the same side next week and they just don't turn up. And that's the type of squad that we had, where there was a level of inconsistency, not just in performance but in terms of behaviours. And so for me that had to be changed, and that was, when I say that nearly broke me and us as staff, it tested my patience, resolve, my spirit in many ways. Because, you know, I've said to you earlier that I like to invest a lot of emotional commitment into a job, and to feel that you get the same sort of commitment back, it's about values, and it's about human qualities that really do count. And I felt shortchanged by certain members of that squad too often, and so clearly we had to change it.
Well, there was a hell of a revamp. Mahrez and Vardy, Knockaert as well, who's someone who we covered in his final season in the Championship with Brighton, when he was just almost untouchable. I'm interested just to talk a bit about recruitment processes, really, and how you were able to build that sort of squad. There's a lot of different, the different managers we've spoken to have worked under different recruitment systems. Yeah. But for example, a signing like Mahrez from Le Havre in Ligue 2, Knockaert as well from Guingamp. How was that coming about? How was the club working to bring these players in and build that squad?
Yeah, I mean, these sorts of stories grow arms and legs at times, and because of the sort of success that we had as a club in terms of signing players. I think there is a danger of it losing the focus of what it was about. I mean, look, how we always worked, and I'd like to be very clear on my input in this. And that is, I want as little input as possible until it gets to making the decision. And so in the early days with Steve, when we were a smaller operation and there was less investment in the recruitment, you know, it's very much about trusted people, seeing players. You know, what we always did, and you got to remember the recruitment aspect of the clubs that I've worked at, along with the staff that I've worked at, have developed in time. You don't go in there, it be the finished article. It starts as something, and with a bit of success, you evolve, and that's exactly what happened. And so, you know, the players that people want to talk about in the Vardys and the Marises and Knockarts and people like that are success stories of the time, but there have been lots before, and there have been some players who have not worked out. And but ultimately our philosophy was always about trying to minimize the risk and getting a database on players, and knowing that we can't compete with the big boys in many ways, so we need to be ahead of the game. And so Steve Walsh did a very good job in setting up a network and a group of people who were very, very good at identifying potential targets for us. And sometimes they paid off and sometimes they didn't. But what we always try to do is minimize the risk and make sure that by the time that Steve had filtered targets before they came to me, it became, you know, I'm not somebody who, I don't want to be going out trawling, going to see millions of games to look at player. I have trust in the people that we have around the team who will know what we're looking for, know what our team has, know what we haven't got, and know what we need to get. And then their job is to identify the players. And then when it gets to a point where I have to come into the equation and say, can I persuade the board or recommend to the board that this is what we would like to do? You know, and I don't want to make it sound any more complicated, or I don't want to trivialise anything that happened. All I'm saying is we always worked in a way which was efficient as a group of staff, and our recommendations would be based on what we thought was the best thing for the football club.
In your period with Leicester in the Championship, of course the promotion to the Premier League, smashing the club record points total that you had set,
yep,
winning League One, but also a moment that is polar opposite to Jimmy Glass, which is Troy Deeney's goal in that playoff game against Watford. It seems unusual to have had a career like yours, which has two of the most famous moments in Football League history, and to have been on either end of the spectrum. There must be many people who have worked as much as you who haven't experienced either of those things.
Yeah, and I suppose I've never really thought of it like that, I suppose, but now you'll probably haunt me with reminding me of stuff like that. When I try and explain what a career in football looks like to people who have a picture that everything's exciting, the analogy, well, what I'd say is that you remember the highs and you'd like to enjoy them more, but they're fleeting, because the highs come, and if you're in the management game, you're looking for the next progression and how to not become complacent. the lows can haunt you and stay with you a long time, because they might have an element of regret and might have some negative feelings which stay with you. And then, of course, there's the majority of the time, which is like most people's jobs, will be that grey area of dealing with the day-to-day stuff, which is what most people's jobs are about. And, you know, football, I don't think, is any different. And so, because I think like that, I like to think, this is not necessarily accurate, of course, but, you know, how do you get over things like that? How do you get over the... So the Jimmy Glass thing happened and people were talking about it 20 years later, and I sort of can't remember half the things that happened on the day. Why? Because it's now part of my history. I was a part of the day, but not a big part of the day. And it happened and you move on. You do other things. The Watford occurrence was gut-wrenching, but it happened, and what's the best thing to do? Well, what we did do, and that was have a meeting and say, right, by the time we all come back in, let's make sure any disappointment that we've got is now put to bed, and we need to make sure that we're ready for the next step. So it's about trying to deal with disappointment and not getting too overly confident or patting yourself on the back too much when you have good times. And I think that mentality as well stood us in really good stead during times where, you know, you're under pressure to get results, and it's about trying to keep an even balance of emotional state during good, bad and indifferent times, so that people are able to perform and deliver. Simple as that.
Yeah, and the season where you won the title, 102 points.
Yeah.
You touched on maybe an inconsistency in the side when you first took over in the second time that you took over Leicester. That was solved by that stage. Is that the key, do you think, to the success?
Yeah, but that's down to recruitment, that's down to building a side that's got an identity, having shared beliefs and goals, all those things, and recruiting players who fit what we need. And I was asked a question not long back by a Leicester fan about how good the second spell is, and I said, yeah, but it wasn't all like that, though, was it? You're remembering just the good times. And so it never looks exactly how people remember it.
Well, this is not a podcast that is particularly interested in the Premier League. Your time managing Leicester in the top tier has been very well covered. Your next job after leaving Leicester was with Derby in the Championship, and you managed Derby for just 9 league games. How do you reflect now on your time there? That chapter of your career?
Yeah, a really difficult personal experience, in the sense that, and again, I'm not going to go into details in terms of what happened or how things were reported, but one of the things that I'm still furious about now is how things were reported and the stories that were generated as to possibly what happened, which was absolute nonsense. And I think really that's all I will say on that aspect of it. What I will say about answering the question about reflecting on the job, a really good football club, a big football club, incredibly well supported. I'd hoped it was going to be a job which would give me an opportunity to achieve success, but look, it just didn't work out. There were a number of things, a number of circumstances that, with hindsight, it was probably a a not a good decision from both myself or from the football club. And I think, you know, I talked to earlier about reflection, and you do reflect on things while you're in it. But of course, when you come out of a situation, it gives you more opportunity to reflect in a better way. What I would say is, though, it really did damage my enthusiasm. I seriously considered stopping managing after that job, just because of, again, I'll refer back to what I've already talked about, is making an emotional commitment and connection with a football club. And I felt that some things that had happened there really did clash too heavily with what I believe in terms of just basic moral values.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we've got the period at Love and in between Derby and where we are now. Mm-hmm. We spoke about that at the top of the podcast. So just the final question, and it's the obvious one really, based on everything we've spoken about and mm-hmm. all your experiences as player and as manager, what are you hoping for over the next few months in the short term? Is there an appetite to find a club to manage in England, abroad? How specific are you with your objectives from here?
That I want to enjoy working. That sounds very woolly and a bit loose, but I want to enjoy working with the people that I work with and have a challenge which presents an opportunity for me to be at my best. And it's really quite simple in those terms. What that actually means in reality is quite complex, but if you're asking me what do I hope for, I hope for a challenge which genuinely excites me, that really stretches me and puts me into a position where I'm having to work hard to achieve what I'm looking for, because that is when I'm at my best. And I think if you spoke to people who work with me, I think they'd say that, yeah, I think they concur with that I'm not always straightforward to work with, but I'm very supportive of the people that I work with, and I like people to enjoy working. Wow. Players, staff alike. It's, you know, we happen to work in the football industry. And I'm not always at ease with how people in the industry are sort of portrayed and what the industry might look like from the outside looking in. We're just ordinary people, really, you know, who have similar needs. And that is, it's great to do a job that you enjoy doing. Yeah. Hey? And not everybody is afforded that opportunity. So yeah, I think it's pretty normal to hope to have a job that you enjoy doing. And if it's not quite the way you want it to be, is to fight really hard to get it into a position where it is enjoyable.
Well, it's been fascinating to hear about your life in football, your thoughts on the game, and really looking forward to seeing what that is the next step, and thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure.